Well, welcome back to the Archaeology News Weekly. I am, as ever, David Connolly. I'm just back from Croatia, so apologies for the delay and the missing news podcast last week. It was a great project, and I look forward to getting back there, and perhaps we'll even end up in the news ourselves. Anyway, this news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And the main headlines from around the world are as follows. The world's oldest submerged town in Greece dates back 5,000 years, and a prehistoric burial site is unearthed in Suffolk in England. Ancient settlements are discovered in Sri Lanka, while back in the UK, a Bronze Age arrowhead adds to the picture of a town's past. A 200,000-year-old cut of meat reveals more about Paleolithic social structure. While still on food, we move to Edmonton, where an archaeological dig uncovers an ancient campsite. And to wash it all down, an archaeologist recreates ancient brews from archaeological samples. The mysteries of Lahoubie site in Jersey is investigated, and more investigation is needed as well, as a tribe wants an Ohio mound protected from a new wind farm. Finally, and perhaps back to Earth, a Neolithic axe is unearthed itself in India. Archaeologists surveying the world's oldest submerged town have found ceramics dating back to the late Neolithic. Their discovery suggests that Pavlopetri off the south coast of Greece was occupied some 5,000 years ago, at least 1,200 years earlier than originally thought. These remarkable findings have been made public by the Greek government after the start of a five-year collaborative project between the Ephorate of Underwater Antiquities of the Hellenic Ministry of Culture and the University of Nottingham. Pavlopetri was a maritime settlement from which the inhabitants coordinated local and long-distance trade, and the Pavlopetri Underwater Archaeology Project aims to establish exactly when this site was occupied, what it was used for, and through a systematic study of the geomorphology of the area, just how the town became submerged. This summer, the team carried out a detailed digital underwater survey and study of the structural remains, which until this year were thought to belong to the Mycenaean period, around 1600 to 1000 BCE. The survey revealed another 150 square meters of new buildings, as well as ceramics that suggest the site was occupied throughout the Bronze Age, from at least 2800 BCE to 1100 BCE. Dr. John Henderson, an underwater archaeologist from the Department of Archaeology at the University of Nottingham, said that the site is unique in that they have almost complete town plan, the main streets and domestic buildings, courtyards, rock-cut tombs, and what appear to be religious buildings, clearly visible on the seabed. Equally, as a harbour settlement, the study of the archaeological material that they have recovered will be extremely important in terms of revealing how maritime trade was conducted and managed in the Bronze Age. Possibly one of the most important discoveries has been the identification of what could be a megaron, a large rectangular great hall from the early Bronze Age period. They have found over 150 metres of new buildings, including what could be the first example of a pillar crypt ever discovered on the Greek mainland. Well, just off it. Two new stone-built kist graves were also discovered, alongside what appears to be a Middle Bronze Age pithos burial. Four more fieldwork seasons are planned before the research is published in 2014. To see the expedition yourself, well, you can watch the video podcast. If you just get yourself along to the Past Horizons video site, www.pasthorizons.tv/TV. It's the last two videos online. A Bronze Age burial site has been unearthed by archaeologists excavating the former home of a Suffolk rugby club. The two fields which served as the home of Sudbury Rugby Club is nearby Great Cornard, and they are the source of great excitement for a team of archaeologists working there. Since moving into the site off the Mead in July, teams from Suffolk County Council's Archaeology Service have discovered a great haul of artefacts dating back to around 3000 BCE. The dig went ahead as part of future redevelopment on the site. One field has been fully excavated and work on the second one is underway and proving fruitful with flint tools, Saxon pottery and even knife blades among the finds. Joe Carruth, senior project officer for the dig, said that it's been very exciting being able to dig two adjacent ring ditches, and they hope it will tell us a lot more about Bronze Age burial rites. Mo Muldowney, archaeological project officer at the Great Corner Dig, said that the site was found to be associated with prehistoric burial practices, and further analysis will determine whether they have human remains. They went on to explain that it lies within a funerary landscape. A team of 12 archaeologists is involved in hand-digging the site due to the sensitivity of the operation, and it's estimated there are another 5 to 6 weeks' work left on the second field. Good luck to them. Let's hope that they find a lot more. Archaeological excavations in Sri Lanka have unearthed remains of ancient human settlements in Vadamaradchi East area. They found evidence of 3 ancient human settlements in this region, spread over an area covering nearly 3 kilometres, and are vitally important to prove the historical background of the Jaffna Peninsula. Pottery will help the archaeologists to determine the age of the settlements, but they are believed to date back to 900 BCE. Archaeologists believe that the Kandaradaya dates back to the Iron Age, and there's sufficient evidence to suggest that these settlements will add to the picture of human occupation in this area. A keen historian is delighted to have discovered a rare Bronze Age arrowhead in Rutland in England. Charles Haworth was out walking his dog in Langham when he came across the piece of history on the edge of a ploughed field. Mr. Haworth commented that he has dreamed his whole life of finding a prehistoric flint, and now he found one when he was least expecting it. He remarked that it's always worth keeping your eyes open. The arrowhead is believed to date to somewhere between 3000 and 1800 BCE. Local archaeologists said it was good to be able to add another arrowhead of this period to Rutland's archaeological archive, and this example is a very fine piece of the flintknapper's craft. This isn't a unique find for Langham, as already 2 other Bronze Age arrowheads were found here in the past. Members of the Langham group hope to conduct field walks next year, when they expect to uncover many more artefacts. Which just goes to show why recording or reporting finds is a good idea, as the picture may build up over time. One find follows another and another, and soon you actually have something to work with. So remember, next time you find a flint by the side of a field, tell some about it. New archaeological evidence of meat-cutting skills in ancient times is being scrutinised by scientists at Tel Aviv University and the University of Arizona. Their research is providing new clues about how, where and when our communal habits of butchering meat developed, and they're changing the way anthropologists, zoologists and archaeologists think about our evolutionary development, economics and social behaviours through the millennia. Presented in the proceedings of the National Academy of Science, new finds unearthed at the Gresham Cave in Israel suggest that during the late Lower Paleolithic period, between 400,000 and 200,000 years ago, people hunted and shared meat differently than they did in later times. Instead of a prized carcass being prepared by just 1 or 2 persons, resulting in clear and repeated cut marks on ancient animal bones suggest something else. Professor Avi Gopher of Tel Aviv University Department of Archaeology points out that the cut marks they are finding are both more abundant and more randomly orientated than those observed in later times, such as the Middle and Upper Paleolithic periods. What this could mean is that either one person from the clan butchered the group's meat in a few episodes over time, or multiple persons hacked away at it together. This finding provides clues as to social organisation and structures in the early groups of hunters and gatherers. Among human hunters in the past 200,000 years, there's a distinctive pattern on how people hunt, who owns the products of the hunt, and how the carcasses are butchered and shared. The rules of sharing are one of the basic organising principles of hunter-gatherer cultures. From 200,000 years ago to the present day, the patterns of meat sharing and butchering run along clear lines. But in the Gresham Cave, something different was happening. There's a distinct shift about 200,000 years ago, and archaeologists and anthropologists may have to reinterpret hunting and meat-sharing rituals. Gresham, which means magic in Hebrew, was discovered 7 miles east of Tel Aviv about 9 years ago during highway construction. The cave contains the remains of animal bones dating back to 400,000 years ago. Most of the remains are from fallow deer, others from wild ancestors of horse, cattle, pig, and even tortoise. An archaeologist has discovered in Edmonton, in Alberta, Canada, an intact 2,000-year-old campsite with enough detail to even guess at the recipe the ancient people were using for their soup. Gareth Spicer, principal archaeologist with Calgary-based Turtle Island Cultural Resource Management, says the black circle of ash, scattered bison bone fragments and chipped rock doesn't count as a major scientific discovery, but the site has enough elements to tell a story about the lives of a small group of people who camped there by the river for several days. I'll just get my teeth back in there. The five-day dig happened last May, Spicer said. Based on the evidence found at the site, a small family group likely camped at the spot for a couple of days before moving on. At the time, it was right on the edge of the river, and the pollen record shows it was surrounded by currant shrubs, chokecherry and roses. They found a broken spear point and more than 150 small sandstone and quartzite fragments, each about the size of a fist, scattered around the blackened earth. The fragments show signs of being heated in a fire, then cracking as they were dumped in cold water. This is a technique that many cultures used to boil water before they had clay pottery or metal pans. If people were camping in one place for a longer time, then they would dig a pit and line it to make a large bowl, then boil water and render the fat from bison bones to make pemmican. The cracked rocks were discarded if they were too small. The archaeologists then sent away several for testing. Traces of pronghorn, rabbit, whitefish and trout, wild onion and sunflower were all found on the rocks, but not in the soil around them, indicating the residue is likely from a soup. To find the age of the fire, Spicer then turned to fragments of several buffalo ribs and a leg bone that were found nearby. He sent them to the lab for a radiocarbon date and got back dates going back 2,000 years. Well, somebody send me the recipe for that soup. It sounds tasty. Patrick McGovern, a researcher at the University of Pennsylvania, had just emerged from the ancient burial site in one of the most extensively excavated archaeological sites in China when a local scientist presented him with what he calls the real treasure. It was a sealed bronze drinking vessel that resembled a teapot from 1200 BCE, with the liquid still inside. McGovern took a sample back to his lab and the analysis confirmed what he had suspected, a lovely yellowish wine. McGovern had become internationally recognized as an authority on ancient potables. This month, he released his book, Uncorking the Past, which describes his research, including the collaboration with Delaware beer brewer Sam Calagoni of Dogfish Head to recreate ancient beverages with recipes he had found. Last week, at an event at the University Museum, he and Calagoni detailed their latest quirky foray, making an ancient Peruvian beer that required them both to spend hours chewing purple corn and using their saliva as part of the fermentation process. 2 months ago, McGovern travelled to Lebanon's Bekaa Valley at the behest of the Syrian-Lebanese winemakers who want to open a wine museum there. After McGovern made a trip to China, the pair collaborated on Chateau Jehu, a recreation of the oldest confirmed alcoholic beverage in the world, dating back to 7,000 BCE. Named after the ancient city, it contained hawthorn fruit, rice and honey. That brew, in fact, won a gold medal at the Great American Beer Festival last month in Denver. Dogfish Breweries donates part of the proceeds from the recreated ancient beverages to McGovern's research in recognition of his contribution. Most of the brews are available commercially from Dogfish. Sounds perfect to go along with my bison soup. The 6,000-year-old burial site at La Hogue Bee in Jersey, a British crown dependency off the coast of Normandy, is one of the best-preserved remnants of the Neolithic period in Western Europe. Every spring and autumn, crowds of people gather to watch the equinox from inside the chamber. Archaeologists can make educated guesses about what went on there, but much is still shrouded in mystery. Hogue and Bee are Norse words. Hog was a Viking term used for a man-made mound, and bay is a homestead, so it could mean that it's the homestead near the mound. Sounds logical. Despite being best known as a burial ground, it was almost like a cross between a modern-day church and a community hall. The cycles of nature were crucial to the survival of the indigenous Neolithic population. The discovery of the equinox alignment brought home how important this time of year was to a farming community. The equinox alignments happen twice a year, and the entrance points directly east, which enables a beam of sunlight to travel up the passageway to illuminate a chamber deep within the mound. Entering the mound is a mildly uncomfortable experience, requiring a visitor to crouch and negotiate the 9-meter passageway leading to the chamber. The passage then opens up into the main chamber, which takes a cruciform shape. Two side chambers to the north and south were burial plots for the dead. The large flat rock at the back end of the passage is raised up from the floor, denoting a more sacred area. The human remains of about 8 people, male and female adults, were found at the site. The items they were buried with are strong evidence in the belief in an afterlife. There were bones of cattle, which may have been left as food, and there were also flint tools that show people believed that they would actually need these things in the next world. Despite significant digs in the 1990s, much of the site remains unexcavated and may reveal more of its secrets for future generations to wonder about. An Indian tribe says plans to build a commercial wind farm in western Ohio in the USA pose a threat to an ancient burial mound, and the state should put a barrier around it to keep it from being disturbed. The Pequot-Shawnee tribe asked that the mound be protected in a motion it filed with the Ohio Power Siting Board regarding EverPower Wind Holdings and their proposal to build a 70-turbine farm near Urbana. Gene Park, an elder of the Alabama-based Shawnees, an agent for the tribe in Ohio, said that there are 6 Indian mounds in the Urbana area that were constructed thousands of years ago by his Shawnee ancestors. One of the mounds is on the site of the proposed wind farm. He said that he identified it based on a book published in 1914 by the Ohio State Archaeological and Historical Society. Park said that there is no marker designating the mound as an Indian burial site, and some people believe it is simply a glacial deposit. However, he said that the tribe is convinced it is a burial mound, and people who live nearby tell him that artifacts have been discovered there for over 30 years. He said the tribe plans to further research the matter and present its findings to the board later this month. Michael Spearschneider, director of the development for EverPower, said that the company has looked at all the known archaeological resources in the area and continued that they are also aware of a mound in the area and have no plans to disturb it. A few hundred acres of land will be disturbed by construction of the turbines, which will be up to 490 feet tall. Park said he is concerned that the mound will be destroyed by construction of the wind farm. He says, "I'm not upset about the turbines, but they dig great big holes and pour concrete. They have to have enormous amounts of concrete, and there's going to be huge earth movers messing the whole place up." Park said the tribe wants the state to erect some sort of barrier to protect it. A Stone Age axe dating back to the Neolithic period has been unearthed during an exploration by the State Archaeological Department near Edakkal Caves in Kerala, India, throwing light into the ancient life and culture of the area. The Neolithic artifact found on Ambukuti Hill weighs in at 550 grams and measures 15 centimetres long. Though different kinds of tools dating back to the Neolithic period have been discovered by researchers in other parts of the district in the recent past, it was the first stone axe found in the area for more than a century. Well, let's hope we don't have to wait too long for the next one. And just before we sign off for this week's edition, let me remind you about this amazing new resource, which is currently being built in Scotland. It's called Open Archive and hopes to cover the whole of the UK, of course. www.openarchive.co.uk. It's a new system which allows local groups and community groups to actually collect their past reports and records and their future ones and get them online so that more and more people can use them in research. Well worth the effort that we're putting into this. So if you want to have a look at that, the beta version just now, it's www.openarchive.co.uk. We're also busily working away on the latest issue 10 of Past Horizons magazine. But until then, of course, you can have a look at the last 9 issues if you go along to www.pasthorizons.com/magazine. There's, of course, a lot more to discover on Past Horizons website, like the videos and the blog. And, of course, the best bit of all, how to get involved in archaeological sites around the world. Remember, of course, More can always be found at Stone Pages, news.stonepages.com. So thank you for listening again to this belated Archaeology News Weekly, and I hope you'll be able to return to us next week.